Can I figure out how this works?
Yes. Okay, so first topic. This topic, I do not have any earth-shattering chidushim on, but this is sort of the basis. This is the basis for pretty much any shiur on methodology of halacha, and that is the question of what does it mean for something to be true halachically? Right? Presumably, whenever we engage in any halachic sugya, we want to get to the correct, true, proper, right answer. Now, all those words have different connotations. All of them have different valences. And the question is, what do we even mean when we say in halacha we want to get to one answer? We want to get to an answer. So, this is broadly speaking discussed as the sugya of Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim. And you'll see, I put here two topics, Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim and Chacham Echad She'asar, because I don't want to stay just on the plane of theory, as I said, right? The point here is legal theory, is understanding the system as a system, rather than just simply understanding the philosophy behind it. So, after we get through really the basics of Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, I want to show you how this plays itself out in halacha. So, the sources that are always first quoted are the following three gemaras. And, you know, when I get to the end of this, I've made one copy. You can make more copies. Probably the best, you know, summary of the different shitos that exist right now is Rosenzweig's article on the topic. Right, I put on the second page other resources. So this is, right, it's his article in Tradition 92, Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, Halachic Pluralism and Theories of Controversy. You have it on email. You can email it to people. What? Yeah. Good, you can email it. I emailed it to you. You can email it up. That's fine. But I have one hard copy. I'll leave it by my makom. You can easily get it. It's on YU Torah, I think I got it from, or I got it from Tradition. I'm not really sure. What? It's on the Gush Files. There we go. It's on the Gush Files. You should have easy access to this article. It's a very good article. Similarly, you can read Rilchamsin's article, Torah's Chesed, Torah's Emes, which touches on similar issues. There's also an article by Aviara Cohen in Hebrew, but you can stick with the English ones if you'd like. Okay, so the first Gemaras. The Gemara Neirvin says, Amar Rabbi Avo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Talmud Hayalol Rav Meir, Vesumchas Shmo, Shaya Omer Al Kol Davar Davar Shel Tuma, Arbaim Ushmone Tamei Tuma, Al Kol Davar Davar Shel Tahara, Arbaim Ushmone Tamei Tahara. For everything he used to give 48 explanations why it was kosher, and 48 explanations why it wasn't. So Tana, Tamid Vasagai Yavna Shemitarza Sheretz, Bemeva Hamishim Tamim. There was a veteran student in Yavna who was able to explain why a bug, a not kosher bug, should be kosher using 150 different reasons. And Amar Avina, Ani Adun Vatarenu, I'll also do it. Uma Nache Shemimis Umarbe. Tuma, if a snake which kills and increases tuma, right? Tuma's mace. Sorry, here we're talking about tuma, not the first half. We're talking about kashra. Second half is tuma and tara. Tahor, right? A snake is not one of the shratzim. Sheret she'enu meimis umar bet tuma lo kol shigain. A sheret which doesn't kill and therefore doesn't cause more tuma, shouldn't it not be tamei velohi masa kots baal makaved? That's not true because the snake is only, right, doing what a thorn would do, right? That doesn't indicate anything fundamental about it. And Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Shmuel, Shalosh Shanim Nechleku Beishamai Beishilel. For 3 years, Beishamai Beishilel argued, Halalo Omrim Halacha Kmo Seinu, Halalo Omrim Halacha Kmo Seinu. These said Halacha is like me, these said Halacha is like me, or like us. Yatza Baskol V'Amra, so the Baskol came out and said, Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chayin Hein. Both of these are Divrei Elokim Chayim, which means what grammatically?
Words of the living God.
Well, either means the word of the living God, meaning you're reading it Divrei, the words of Elokim Chayim, or it means the living words of God, right? Divrei Elokim Chayim, right? Okay, these are both Divrei Elokim Chayim. V'halacha k'beis Hillel, but despite that, the halacha is like Beis Hillel. And since they're both, whatever that means, so then why were Beis Hillel, why did they merit to have the halacha established like them? Because they were They didn't stand up for their kavod, essentially. Vishonin devrayim v'devrei Beis Shammai, and they would teach both their position and that of Beis Shammai. V'lo od, and not only that, el shemakdim v'devrei Beis Shammai l'devrayim. When they would teach, they would preface Beis Shammai's words over their own. Right, so we have this Gemara, which is strange, right? It starts off with seemingly a celebration of Sumchus's ability to explain why something which was kosher was not, and vice versa, right, in 48 different ways. And it celebrates multiple positions, the Shita Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. God says, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, both of these are, whatever exactly that means, either the words of a living God or the living words of God. And despite the fact that they're both divrei Elokim chayim, halacha ke Beis Hillel, and then the Gemara explains for sort of like a Musar reason, because Beis Hillel was like frumer. They were more menches, they were anavim. So then, okay, so we paskin like them. So that is a little bit strange, but we start out with this Gemara. Okay, let's read the other Gemaras, and then we'll at least read the second Gemara. No, we'll read all three Gemaras, and then we'll talk about them. So the second Gemara says, Baalei Asufot, this Gemara Chagiga Dav Gimel Beis. What are Baalei Asufot? Elu Talmidei Chachamim Shiyoshvin Asufot Asufot Voskim Batarat. These are Talmidei Chachamim who sit in rounding groups. Halol Mitamin, Valol Mitarin, Halol Osrin, Valol Matirin. These say that it's impure, these say that it's pure, these say that it's Asr, these say it's Mutar. Halol Poslin, Valol Machshirin. So Shema Yomar Adam, maybe someone will say, Heyach Ani Lamei Torah Me'ata, how am I supposed to learn Torah? Talmud Lomar, Kulam Nitznu Me Ro'eh Echad, all of them were given from the same shepherd. El Echad Nitanan, one God gave them, Parnes Echad Amaran, one leader said them, meaning Moshe, Mi Pi Adon Kol Masim Barachu, Tichsev Vaydaber Elohim Egol Advarim Ha'ile, Af ata ase asnecha kafar chesed. So you too should make your ears like a sieve, something like that. Uknele chalev mivin lishmo divrei metamim v'divrei metarin v'divrei osrim v'divrei matirin v'divrei poslin v'divrei machshirin. To hear the words of all positions. Right, that's Gemara 2. So already in the first, right, the first Gemara, we have Beis Hillel Beis Shammai arguing, and they're both called divrei Elokim chayim. Second Gemara, we go farther, right? Because now we say not only do you have Chachamim saying that things are mutter, things are aser, but here you have a statement that all of those reasons were given from God, right? You know, we'll hold off on the third Gemara for a minute. Okay, so now, reading these two Gemaras straight, if I asked you, what does it mean, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim? What does it mean that kulam meiroa echad nitnu? What would you tell me?
All opinions were from God.
Meaning what?
So, like, when you have a machloket, both of those opinions in machloket are seen.
Right. Right. The simplest understanding simply is that, right, pshuto kemashmo, there are multiple truths. Yes, which is a... Now, that's the simple pshat of the Gemara. What is the problem with any multiple truth theory?
What if they're mutually exclusive truths?
Good, right? Truth is usually mutually exclusive to other truths, right? Unless they're not talking about the same thing. But if they're talking about the same things, right? Self-contradictory truths usually are not true, right? We have this is a rule of formal logic called the rule of non-contradiction. Right, P and not P cannot both be true. Right, in formal logic, if you posit both P and not P, the conclusion is anything you would like, because once you generate a contradiction, right, anything can be generated from a contradiction, because everything follows plausibly from something that is obviously not true. Right, you will see this is a favorite game of analytic logicians. Right, they will put on the board two ridiculously long, complicated things, which you can't tell whether they contradict or not until you actually symbolize it. And then, you know, they'll eventually get the two things. You'll see it's P and not P, right? It's something and it's negation. And then what follows from this is, as Professor Johnson and Y.U. would say, Professor Johnson is from Mars, or Professor Johnson is a frog, or whatever, because, right, those are equally true once you posit a contradiction. Right, so this is the problem in general with multiple truth theory. So for that reason, ruba di ruba of Rishonim, and Achronim and Poskim reject the notion of a multiple truth theory in halacha. For example, if you look here in source 4, the Chidah and the Gemara in Erevin says, the Masha Kaz of Elu Elu Devar Elu Kim Chayim Ein Perusho De Shem Emet. It doesn't mean both of them are true. Elu Likyo De Ein Ha'or Nikar Elu Mitoch HaChoshech. It means that light is only discernible from darkness. Right? So Elu Elu Devar Elu Kim Chayim, because the wrong position helps illuminate the correct position. Nimtzad Asvar Amit Nagedet Toil Havin Heitev Asvar Amitit. So the right, contrary position will help you understand the nature of the true one. Be'etzem, at its fundamental nature. U'bitzad zeh kariba minei divrei elukim chayim u'olam disvar achar emet v'asar achar eina emet. So we call it divrei elukim chayim because they're both beneficial in our pursuit of truth, but they're both not actually true. Similarly, if you look at the Hakdam of the Nesivos, source 5, right? This is the context of explaining what is the value of his work if it turns out that he's wrong. Which the Nesivos is very rarely wrong. But when the Nesivos is wrong, says, still, if I'm wrong, we call makom toalat yeshbo lechachamim. There's still a benefit to scholars. Ubeveyur amru chazal. People cannot succeed in Torah unless they failed, unless they made a mistake. We know that Torah is compared to water. Someone who goes into the wild, turbulent waters to get the precious jewels and stones, he'll be blinded. And it'll be impossible for him to see the fine jewel, right, in this whole storm. Instead of getting the gem, instead of getting the pearl, he'll get clay. Ulam acharha loto. But after he gets it out, orinav ito l'samein. Okay, that's definitely a typo. Something. Hey, Teva, Freshim, Enehem. Le'atzmo, that's what it is. Okay. Bar Ilan got that backwards. But whatever, he'll be able to, once he pulls it out, he'll be able to tell the difference. Akshut Soleil, Shuv, Pam, Shenit, Evan, Amadelim, Etze, Oat. So that when he does it again, right, he won't make a mistake. Vimnim Sam, Etiv, Ulurot, Ladad, Abnim, Holyakar, Ratainav. And the more he checks the difference between good and bad, he'll eventually won't make as many mistakes and he'll be able to find the jewels. So therefore, pulling up the mistaken issues, mistaken positions, helped him from making more mistakes. And this is what Chazal say, that if it weren't for the fact that I'd sometimes picked up pottery instead of the pearl, I never would have gotten the pearl, and for this is also schar min hashamayim. Right, so that's sort of the straightforward, intuitive svara view, right, that there can't be multiple truths, it's impossible. And therefore, when we talk about multiple truths, we don't really mean multiple truths, we mean they're most valuable. Right? Other positions, they're both valuable because they were both seeking Dvar Hashem, they're both valuable as a Kiyum and Talmud Torah, but they're not actually both right. The most famous modern presentation of it in a fascinating, yeah.
If you know one is wrong, is it still valuable at that point? Then it's only valuable to teach others who don't know yet the difference between the two different, the better one and the worst one.
Right, so that's what you'd have to ask, right? Right, they want to say yes. You can come up with some brisker thing. It has like a value in a Kiyum of Talmud Torah. Why? I'm not really sure, right? If something's really, really wrong, it shouldn't. No one wants to say that, but this is the koshi you run into, right? If you follow the logical position, there's only one truth, right? So then yes, right? What really should happen is, if you really thought, let's say the Rambam got everything right, you would just read Rambam, because positions that are rejected are now valueless, right? I mean, maybe they're good and contrasting, but like, they're not so deeply fundamentally valuable. Yeah, that is sort of a problem with that position. It may not be a problem, right? You know, it may just you may just think the value is to learn Alibi de Hilchosa. Therefore, you really should focus almost all your energies on the shittas that we accept, right? Yeah.
Maybe if you could answer the question saying that in a theoretical world, that would actually be 100% true. In a practical world, there can never be such a thing as 100% truth. And therefore, you can only get to 99.9 whatever, and then you're on the other side because it's always a suffix.
Okay, I mean, that's always possible, but what if something's rejected, you know, Kvar in the Gemara, right? Should we still, right? Meaning, assuming we accept Stimas HaTalmud, right, as the final psak, which for almost all intents and purposes we do, but we'll see that that's, as Yaakov already knows, the Orza Ruah throws a monkey wrench in that that has caused disastrous implications that no one has yet quite figured out, and then it only gets worse in the Taz, Paskins at La Halacha, and then we don't know what to do. But assuming we think that Stimas HaTalmud is all there is, right? So anything that's rejected before Stimas HaTalmud, presumably you should no longer learn. That would be what follows logically. Okay. Look, the most probably famous modern example of this position, we won't read through all of it, but it's kedai for people to read, is, I printed out, again, one extra copy, but this is not so hard to find, is the Hakdama of the Igros Moshe. The Igros Moshe, just two pages, not long. In explaining why it is that he, who was not ra'i to Paskin, started to write Shuvos Igros Moshe, has a brief discussion of the nature of Psak. And I'll explain it outside. Basically, he establishes that there's two types of truth. There's what we call Emet Lamito, which means Emet Lamito is true, right? That's what we call truth. And then there's emet lahora'a. There's the truth in terms of paskening, or the practical truth. And Ramosha says, look, we are not bound to emet la'amito. There is a truth out there about halakha, whatever it is. But the other Gemara that everybody quotes, but I didn't want to get into it now, is the Tanur Shach. My Gemara, lo bashamayim hi, right? Lo bashamayim hi. The truth is in heaven. The real truth is up there, some metaphysical reality about the world. I don't care. We are bound by emet lahora'a. We are bound by the procedural truth. Right? We are bound by what is right according to the rules. And therefore, a posek is required to do what he thinks is right, and then is bound to that, even if it contradicts real truth, even if we know it contradicts real truth. Now, again, this shita is slightly... Now, it right, there's a certain intuitive appeal to it, because, again, we don't have to posit a multiple truth theory, but it's a little bit disturbing, because what he's saying is, we are bound to follow what is potentially, or even almost definitely, not true, if the rules tell us that. What I didn't put here, but, again, you can look it up, the Drashas Haran... Joshua Yudalef similarly holds this way. His explanation is even more striking. And the mashal goes like this. Let's say all the doctors in the world told you that something was not poisonous. But it was. And you ate it. Good. What happens to you? You die. You die, right? Very simple. Plain and simple. So he said that's the same thing, right? Mitzvos, right? The Ron is slightly more mystically inclined, right? Assuming the Drashas Haran are written by the Ron that we know, which we don't know whether they are or not. If they are, he's related to the Ramban, right? And sort of a student of the Ramban, or student of the student, whatever. But the Ramban makes the same comments, right? Sin is, there's something metaphysically true about sin, right? Sin is the is a metaphysical poison. And just like drinking poison would kill us here, doing a sin creates a pegamba nefesh, right? The Ramban says this both in Vayikra, in 1.3, 1.4, one of those, and in Taras Adam. So sin is the same way. And he said, look, so it doesn't matter, right? If your posek tells you that something is wrong, is right, and it's in fact wrong, so too bad, you just had poison. And you can yell and scream and whatever you want, but you just had poison. And then he says, you know what? Not only that, if Sanhedrin HaGadol HaYoshev Yerushalayim tells you that something is wrong, is right, and in fact it's wrong, poison. Mishnah, Gemara, I don't care. All Chazal told you something is right and it's wrong. Good. That's very nice. You've just had poison and you were going to die. That's the Ron's thesis. Now, the Ron also realized that this was a slightly implausible thesis, because if this was true, it would be unlikely that we would have rules like, the obligation to listen to Chazal, right? We'd be much more likely to be Karaites, where, you know, you're responsible for your own soul. I don't care what anyone else says, right? But we're not. So the Ron says two things. So first he says, look, the reason that Hashem commanded us to keep the system despite the fact that sometimes they're wrong is because what's more likely, right? We don't want to have that much poison in our lives. You're definitely going to have some poison. So what's more likely? If me, you know, a 25-year-old with X limited background opens up the psukim and tries to figure out from square one everything I'm supposed to do, or if I listen to the collective wisdom of 7,500 years worth of people who are much more qualified than I am. So, in all likelihood, the latter is going to get me truth more of the time. So it makes sense that we follow sort of a procedural system where we listen to Sanhedrin, Agadah, Yeshiva, Shalayim, and Chazal, and Rov, and etc. So then at the end, the Ron says, well, okay, so I said it was poison and that you're going to die, but you know what? Hashem wants you to listen to Chazal, so maybe Hashem will create a miracle, and even though it should kill you, it won't kill you. But fundamentally, it would kill you, but Hashem at the end, you know, he's the Rofe Kolbasar, he is the physical, spiritual, metaphysical doctor, he will come in and wipe away that dirt on your soul, and you'll be all fine. But fundamentally, right, he says basically the same thing as Ramosha. Look, we are bound not to real truth, not to Emet Lamito, we're bound to Emet Lahora'ah, and that potentially could be wrong, but for whatever practical reasons, that's what we're bound to. Okay?
I'd say the question is more of a question, maybe for Ron also. Is Emet Lahora'ah an arbitrary decision, or is it supposed to best of our ability?
No, okay. Okay, I should clarify. Right? Obviously, Emet Lahora'ah is to the best of our ability, usually, to, right, we're supposed to try to get the truth. Now, right, the problem with the Tanur Shel Chai Gemara is that by all stretches of the imagination, it seems like if God himself came out of heaven and told you, this is the halacha, and then you say, no, lo b'shamayim hi, right? The simple read of that Gemara, if you have a Ramosha Ran, most Rishonim and Achronim-esque conception, is that that Gemara doesn't really make sense. Because that's very fine that we follow procedure because it's more likely you get you to the truth. But when it seems like procedure is breaking down and one person has God on his side, so normally I would follow God, right? That's the most likely outcome. So there what you have to say is that, right, still, you have to be bound by the system, right, for whatever reason, right? You have to be bound by Emet Lahora'ah even if you know it contradicts Emet Lamito for whatever procedural reasons you want to explain, right? But yeah, that's sort of the jump that, because obviously both Laron and Ramosha think the reason you're bound to Emet Lahora'ah is because it's going to approximate Emet Lamito as much as possible, right? But the Tanur Shel Chai Gemara sort of makes it weird, because then you have to explain that that isn't just sort of theoretical, it's even when I know that's not happening. Or you have to explain that the Bosco really wasn't telling you the truth, it was telling you that it was L'chvodo, right? It didn't really indicate truth, which people say, obviously, but right, there is sort of a, you know, that's it. You go on the defensive when you have that type of moment in the Gemara. Yeah.
Just to clear this up, Rav Moshe then would say anyone who, like, hypothetically disagreed with his pesach, like if it was a machlok at him and Rav Henkin, who's like and read all the same Gemaras, he would also be b'chay according to Rav Moshe, because
yeah. Now Rav Moshe also claims that his Teshuvah Sefer is not meant to be binding. Right, he also claims that you're supposed to, my Teshuvah Sefer is supposed to lead you through the sugyas and you can decide for yourself. You know, any Moreh Hora can read through it, and don't take my position. If you like my position, so agree with me, but don't take it because it's me, take it because it's right. Okay, but yeah. Okay. So that's sort of position one. Now again, there's, you know, sub-formulations within it, but it's basically the theory that there's one truth out there, and for whatever reason, we follow Emet Lahora'ah, we follow a procedural truth. Okay, the third Gemara here, we'll just look at it and then we'll get into the next position, which is sort of perhaps the most striking, is Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav. Bishasha Moshe Lamarom, when Moshe went up to Marom, when he went to Shamayim, Matzal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shiyoshev V'Kosher K'tarim Lotiyot. So he found God tying the crowns on the letters of the Torah. So Amar Lefanav, he said to him, Ribon Shalom, Mi Ma'akev El Yadcha, right? Who is making you spend so much time tying these crowns on letters? Amar Lo, Adam Echa Yesh, Ja'azad Liyaz, B'sof Kamadaraz, V'akiva Ben Yosef Shemel. There's a guy who's going to come around in a long, long time. His name is Akiva. Who's going to, on every crown, learn piles and piles of halacha. So Amar Lefanav, so he said to him, Ribono Shel Olam, Hareli, I want to see him. Amar Lo, Chazor Lacharecha. So he said, okay, turn around. Right, go backwards. Halach V'yashav, right, so time warp. Halach V'yashav V'sof Shmona Shiros. He sat down in the eighth row in Rabbi Kiva's yeshiva. Bracket. Eighth row. Why eighth row? I assume some people have seen this Gemara, yes? Ever bother asking why eighth row? Close. First thing you have to know is Batei Medrash were arranged by how smart you are, right? The smartest Talmud's in the front, and then you go down through all the rows. How many rows are there in a Beis Medrash in Rabbi Kiva's time?
Seven.
Eighth row means Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't deserve to be in Rabbi Kiva's Beis Medrash, right? This is the image, right? Just so you know the image, right? He didn't know, which makes sense in the next line, right? And he didn't know what they were saying, right? Now you see why it's the eighth row, because he doesn't deserve a yeshiva, and that's why he didn't understand what they were saying, right? This fits very well. If you didn't know that, you wouldn't realize that. Tashash Chocho, right? So he got a little bit depressed, right? Here's Moshe Rabbeinu. Fine. So Kevin Shegila Davar Echad. So at some point, they got to something, and they said, Amr lo Tamidav, so it's Tamidim says Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi. Minai lecha? How do you know? So Amar Len halacha Moshe miSinai. Great. This hashvadaita. So Moshe, come down. Chazar balafnei. Chazar baruch hu. So we came to God. Amar lefana Ravona shalom yesh lecha adam kazev ata nosin Torah al yadi. You have somebody this great, and you give the Torah through me. Amar lo shtok. Kach alam machshav lefana. Be quiet. That's what I wanted to do. Amar lefana Ravona shalom erizani Torah. So arayni schara. So he said, you showed me a Torah. Let me see what his end is. Amar lo chazar lacharech. He said, fine, go look around. Chazar lacharev. He turned around. Rosh Hashoklin b'sar b'makolin. He saw the wonderful instance from Brachos Samach Aleph where his skin is being scraped off with metal combs. Amar lefana Ravona shalom zutara b'zuchara. Right, this is Torah and this is its reward. Amar lo shtok. Kach alav b'machshav lefanai. What is the obvious oddity in this Gemara?
Akiva changed something from Moshe.
What?
Akiva changed that from Moshe.
So well, yeah, right. Meaning Moshe doesn't understand what's going on. He says, "Gach halav machshava lefanai." And he says, "Right, this is alchem what you've seen." Okay, simple answer. Somebody give me the simple answer. Don't, right, forget that I'm dealing with a complicated topic. Just give me the Balabatish answer.
He forgot.
He didn't get it yet, right? Oh. Right? Torah wasn't given. That's Rashi says in the Gemara, right? The Torah hadn't been given yet. So Moshe's like, oh my God, I have no idea what's going on. And then he hears, Alech Moshe Misina. He's like, oh, phew. I'm getting this tomorrow. I'm going to know this. I'm going to know everything. Great. That's the simple answer. Right? The Ritva quotes from the Rabbeinu Tzurva's not that way. And this is where we're going to get into the more complicated theories, right? You should know, I put the Ritva simply because he's the most famous one of the sources, but we actually have now the compilation of Tosfos that he's quoting. It's found in Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz. It's source 6. Eilu ve'ilu divrei Elokim chayim. Shalu Rabbeinu Tzurva zal. The Bali Tosfos asked, Heyach efshar yushneim divrei Elokim chayim. V'zeh oser v'zeh matir. Right. Good question. How could they both be Divrei Elokim Chayim, which sounds like truth, right? If one says X and one says not X. V'teretzu, and they answered, Ki kisha'ala Moshe l'marom, when Moshe went up to Shamayim, l'kabel Torah, hereyu lo, kol davar v'davar, mem tet panim li'isur, mem tet panim le'ater. Hashem gave him everything, 49. Aser, 49, mutter. V'shala kodesh baruch hu alzeh, and he said, what is this? V'amar shehei zeh masur lechachmei Yisrael v'chol dor v'dor v'yeh hachra'ak motam. Because the Torah is given over to chachmei Yisrael in every generation, Menachon hu lifi hadrash uvederech haemet yesh tam v'sod v'davar. Right, this makes sense. I'll be a drash. I'll be derech haemet, and I'll be sod. Okay. The Ritva is also, for those of you who do not know, the Ritva is also a Kabbalist. Okay, you should know the Ritva brings up Kabbalah. I forget what it was, something like 30 times in his parish. I don't know. Someone did the count at some point. I think Zussman, but he's also a Kabbalist. I don't know what this means. The last line, but. You got a question? Okay. But, right, the Ritva quotes from the Reminut Zarfas from the Bavli Tosfos that what's the answer to all these questions? How do the first two Gemaras make sense? How does the third Gemara make sense? There are multiple truths, right? What does it mean, Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim? They're both true. What does it mean that everything was given by Ro'eh Echad? Everything was given by Ro'eh Echad. Hashem put into the system 49 different truths. What does it mean that Moshe didn't know the answer? Yeah, he didn't know the answer because he didn't get an answer, right? He got a whole bunch of possibilities, right? And as anybody knows, any Shaila consists of like 7, 8, 9, 10 factors, right? So here, Rabbi Akiva, like, you know, Halacha Moshe Mesinai, right? He, in truth, got the mechanisms, he got the possibilities, he got whatever it exactly got from Moshe Mesinai, but Moshe didn't necessarily see that truth. Because Torah develops, and that actually is the true Chavsa Shel Torah, right? Multiple truth theory, right? Not double truth doctrine as in the medieval sense. But this is, if you read Rav Rosenzweig's article, you see that's how he starts it, right? We're not talking about the double truth doctrine of the Christians in the medieval period, which means that there's reason, and then there's revelation and whatever. But multiple truths, okay? Rashi also in source 7 seems to say this. We'll get to it in a minute though. Now, obviously multiple truth theory, so it fits with the Gemara's very well, right? And it explains all the problems of like, why do we learn positions we don't paskin like? Because they're true in some metaphysical sense, and why can we sometimes paskin like rejected positions? Because they're true in some sense, etc., etc., etc. It doesn't really answer the question of how can there be multiple positions? So, in Ochanami, the majority of poskim throughout time have rejected this position, despite the fact that it is the simple pshat in the Gemara, right? And it was accepted by some of the Balei Tosfos, by the Ritva, by the Ktzos in his Akdama, and, you know, is like, all briskers love it. Rav Aaron loves it in his article on Taras Emes, Rosenzweig loves it, I like it, you know, whatever, I'm not like, the fact that it goes against many, many people has not stopped any of my Rebbeim from believing in it wholeheartedly. And it does seem to be simple proud of the Gemaras, even though it leaves you with a very sort of, right, intellectually, it's very difficult, right? What does it mean for there to be multiple truths? Now, here you would have to talk on the level of, you'd have to distinguish between metaphysical truths and legal truths, right? Meaning, it's perfectly possible that, like, there are, you know, that there are multiple elements of truth and each different thing reflects a different perspective of truth in some metaphysical sphere, right? Law, by definition, right, is a practical system. So it is entirely possible that there can be multiple truths floating out there, right, which would yield different legal decisions. And all of them are potentially true, right? It's not like, I mean, the same is true in American law, right? You look at the Supreme Court could have decided X, it could have decided Y. It only becomes binding law after they make a decision. It's not like both of those were not possibilities before, right? And you can even overturn it later on by different Supreme Court, right? In law, there is a possibility philosophically. Now, it's not an easy jump to make, but it's a jump that can be made. And to say that it is possible to have multiple truths, and law isn't bound to the rules of non-contradiction for the very simple reason that law is a practical system. And in fact, you can say, look, there's multiple elements of truth, right? There are the multiple perspectives. All of them could have been solidified into psak, could have been solidified practically. We chose one, or we choose the other, or we change our minds, right, at different points in history. But that is at least a philosophical possibility. Yes?
Can you differentiate between what you just said and what is prefaced in the Igrot Moshe?
Yeah, I mean, the Rav Moshe thinks there is only one, there really is only one truth, right? The Torah in God's base medrash says one thing, okay, right? It happens to be we're not bound by it, right? Right, we're obligated to follow the rules, and like whatever the rule happens to be, right? Meaning he thinks that law can contravene some ultimate truth, right? This position says no. There is in God's Torah there's an array of possibilities of what could be true. They all reflect some metaphysical truth. Right? Emet Lahora'ah solidifies one of them into the practical psak we follow, but it doesn't contravene some higher truth. Yeah.
Assuming multiple truths with the basis for choosing between one option or the other.
And hold that, and that is what I'm going to get to in 1 second. Yeah.
So according to Rav Moshe, when there's a machloket in the Gemara, that means that somewhere down the line there was like a mess up in the Masorah.
And not necessarily. It could be, right, it's machloket in Svara, right? If it's Alecha Moshe Misinai, then yeah, something was wrong, you know. If there can be a machlokes in Alecha Moshe Misinai. I mean, sometimes it's breakdown Masorah, sometimes it's just, right, you have a new case that wasn't exactly covered by Masorah, and now you're arguing with Shekla Das, you're arguing with Sandra Shos, right, and there's some breakdown in somebody's logic.
Like, when you have time, it's for dominance. So like Rabbi Huda and Tanakhama.
Again, you know, different things are going to be different things. Sometimes it's going to be a mistake in Masorah. Sometimes it's going to be a mistake in Svara. Sometimes it's going to be a mistake in Drashos. It could be anything.
Is Machloket determined how you maybe different how you explain the term there Chava or there Kafir?
It might be. I mean, right? This affects everything pretty much, which is why, despite the fact I didn't want to get into philosophy so much, I wanted to do this first. But. Okay, so this is like broadly speaking. I'm sure when Ellie does his shiur and Elu Ve'ilu, he'll basically cover what I just did. But now getting to our very good question over here, right? And this is why I want to deal with this topic. So this is all the philosophy. This is about all the philosophy I'm doing for the year, okay? Right? Or at least systematically. Where does this leave us in terms of procedure, right? Because, right, where are we going now? Right, because what I really want to talk about is procedures, legal theory. So this is an important background. But like, where does this actually go? So, okay, if you look at source 7, so Rashi also seems to hold like the Ritva, there are multiple truths. But Rashi, I won't read it inside, you know, it's a little bit long, and it's already getting late. But Rashi, you'll see, famously Rashi says, look, certain machloksim are not subject to Elu Ve'ilu Divrei Elokim Chaim, such as a mistake in Girsa. Right? If it turns out that there really was only one halacha, right? Everyone knew what this halacha was, right? It just happened to be we made a mistake in Gersa, right? Like, for example, right? What does the Rambam mean? Do non-Jews who keep mitzvos because of their own intelligence and not because Moshe commanded it, right? Do they get schar or not? Well, it's a machlokas in Gersos, right? We have two Gersas in the Rambam, right? The Rambam says they are not. Ein zeh mi chasidehem, right? A non-Jew who keeps the seven mitzvahs under those circumstances is not a chasid, right? Then either says vilo mechachamehem or ella mechachamehem, right? Either he is one of their wise men or he is also not a wise man, right? I don't know what the answer is, but it clearly was one of them, right? So Rashi says, look, there are limits to Divrei Elokim Chaim at some point, right? Certain things are just mistakes. Or there are many, many pithy ways of saying this, right? There are shivim panim l'tara, but not shivim ve'echad, right? Or just because, right, multiple people can be right doesn't mean you are, right? Or just because I'm not right doesn't mean you are. Or just because I'm not wrong doesn't mean you're right, or whatever, right? Everyone has their own formulation on this theory, right? So, obviously, there are certain things that are out, right? Either they don't follow logically, they break an explicit Masorah, they violate the rules, right? They violate a whole bunch of things, right? So there are things that are out. Now, the fact that there are things that are out, right, also really doesn't help us. The question is, more importantly, you know, because we all sort of understand there's something which is out, right? There are some things which are just wrong, right? There are some things that are just an egregious violation of all the rules, of all logic, of all everything. The bigger question, right, is how do you decide? Yeah? Or is the other one bothering you more? Which one? Right, it's two questions, right? One is the question of how do we know what's out? Right, totally out. Right? Then the question is, how do we decide practically? Or why would we decide practically?
Do we have to say that it's totally out?
Well, there's clearly something is definitely out. Right? The question is, what? Right, now, you can say that a lot of things are out. You can say some things are out. Right, there's something which is out. Like, again, right, if something is based on a total, like a mistaken girsa, right, it's out. Right?
But it's in and it just wasn't written.
What?
It's in it.
Okay, it was a mistaken girsa in Chumash. How about that? Right? I don't know. If there's such a possibility. Right? Okay. But if that person didn't have our Torah, which is clearly the Torah given to Moshe Rabbeinu, okay? So, that person was out. I don't know. Right? there's some limit, right? Again, where that limit is hard to draw the line. Now again, right, you have to, right, things can't be, you know, counter-logical, right? They can't fly in the face of logic, or they can't break a pasuk, right? That's, you know, the example in Erevin, right? Certain things, you can say as many svaras as you'd like that a sheretz is tahor, but it's not, right? Because there's explicit pasuk that says no, right? That's what we call ta'abidavashat stukim bodimbo, right? Which has no halakhic status as a hurrah at all, right? I mean, let's start with Chumash, right? Okay. Not really, but let's start with Chumash with everything where we don't say that psak oker halacha, okay? Right? Or psak oker pshat, or whatever, right? Halacha oker pshat. Their psukim are your limit, right? Let's just say that as an easy one, right? Now, what else fits in that category is very complicated, right? But there are certain things that are out in theory. Okay. Now, Rosenzweig points out, and he's completely correct. So, now I come to methodology of psak. Now tell me, for who is methodology of psak more important? Let's say, Rav Moshe, and the Ran, and whatever, or the Ritva, and the Baal HaTosfos, and the Ketzos, and who is it more important for? So your intuitive guess would be, yeah, Ramosha, right? Because, like, there's one truth, and now we just have set up a set of rules to figure out what the one truth is, and, like, this is the best system possible. Except, that's not really true. I mean, maybe it's true, but wait a second. It's clear that however many possible truths there are out there, right, the halachic system has to work such that the halachic community does one thing, or that's the ideal, right? The community is doing one thing. Great. If there are multiple actual truths out there, so what determines what I do? Meaning, on a certain level, if the ultimate goal is to find one truth, right? There is only one truth and I want to find it. So what's the purpose of process, right? Of procedure? It's a means to find that one truth. But what really binds me? The truth, right? The reason I follow the procedure is because I think that most of the time it'll get me to the truth. But really, really, really what binds me is the truth, right? Or is the attempt at getting at the truth, right? But if you think there are multiple truths, then what binds me? Process. Procedure. The rules in the halakhic system are become not part of what binds me, but the only thing that binds me, because it's not the truth that's binding me. This could have been equally usur, equally mutter. In fact, God said both. God gave you 48 reasons or 49 reasons why this was kosher and why this was treif. And we made a decision at some point that we're going to follow X. So what binds me to X? The fact that we decided X. Not the fact that it's true, but the fact that we decided X. So ironically, at some level, procedure, right, becomes more important if you believe in a multiple truth theory. Now, it's not entirely true, because, and Yaakov knows I push at this, right? Because there are certain times when things won't be decided by process, right? There are certain questions that are outside of process, right? The example I gave at some point was, let's say you in 10, 15, 20 years are a posek of notable stature, but you're not the Gadol Hador. Okay, may this be all of our like, you know, this may be my klalat all of you, right? You, that some of you will only make it to slightly below the level of Gadol Hador. Okay, fine. And then you get a question that you just do not feel ready to pasken. You're just not qualified to pasken. Okay? But the person coming to you, you're his rabbi. So now he wants, so you're not ready to pasken, so you are going to tell him, go to the Gadol Hador. And you know that posek X poskens its mutter, and posek Y poskens its usser, right? The example I gave was a certain very prominent Rosh Hashiva, who I have no problem saying, except that I'm on recording, I don't know if he would want this publicized, right? I assume he would, but I don't know. Once got a shaila about abortion of a Tay-Sachs child, right? This is a very difficult case. So he got the shaila, and someone said, and he said, he came into shir one day, and he said, look, I am not right. A Paskin de Shaila, right? Abortion is suffix murder. I am not touching this with a 10-foot pole. Elamai, I know that Rav Moshe Feinstein says it's aser, and I know that the Tzitz Eliezer says it's mutter. So I sent him to the Tzitz Eliezer. Now, is that a decision or not a decision? It's a decision. Is it bound by any rules? No, because you didn't Paskin. Right? Procedure can only bind you if you're making a choice. Right? So what I pointed out before is that we might pretend that the philosophy doesn't matter at all, because, like, no, what really matters is process. But there's going to be some point where suddenly you're faced with a situation where it's not subject to process, because you're going to have a choice to shirk your responsibility to Paskin, but pastorally you're still going to have to do something. And that decision is going to carry with it halachic implications, but it's not bound by process because you're not doing anything that is recognizable halachically. So now, right, well, let's say. Let's say I was a posig, and I got the abortion shayla, and I thought that Rav Moshe was right. Right? I wasn't sure, but I thought Rav Moshe was right. So if there's only one truth in the world, I'm very unlikely to send in the Tzitz Eliezer. Right? That's a bit much. Right? To allow murder it's definitely murder. I think it's probably murder. Like, I'm not going to do that. If I say, look, there's both of them make coherent arguments, and both of them, I think, are possibilities. So my inclination goes more with Rav Moshe. So what, right, if I am open to the possibility that both of them are at some level right, right, I might be willing to give it over to the Tzitz Eliezer and let him, with his shoulders and his authority, Paskin Lekula. I might, right? Not necessarily. But there are always going to be circumstances that where process itself can't actually help you. So, yes?
Well, the processes don't matter at all.
Well, the processes don't matter, but that's...
It seems like from the first Gemara that we just decided because it's all true, so we can really be as mako as we want, because, like...
Right, now, other Gemaras say that, I mean, the rest of the Gemaras says it's not exactly true, right? It was more than that, right? That was why, like, in theory, like, God wanted it that Beisela would be halacha, but really it was because Beisela was Rov, and Beishamai was Machadde, and whatever, right? I mean, there were also procedural rules there also, but sure. Okay, so the reason that philosophy is important is for two reasons. One is because I don't actually think it's true that philosophy doesn't permeate at some level the decisions people make. Because, in the end of the day, the more you think that multiple things can possibly be true, the more likely you are to find creative ways of, right, when there's a need, which we'll get into what a need means, but that's going to be later on, to create a non-halachic or non-procedural way, to, right, or meaning not in like an anti-halachic way, simply non-procedural way to get psak X to be the psak that they follow. And two, because honestly, right, the way we think about things does affect the way we paskin, or we make decisions, right? That is inescapable, that's an ineluctable truth of human life. Okay. In the time remaining, very quickly, we had a question first? No? Okay. So, one example, I think, where it comes up, where you'll see that this philosophy actually manifests itself into the world of Psak Tzufa, is a question of Chacham Echad, Sha'asar Chacham Echad Shehitir. So if you look at the Gemara, source 8, the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan, Anishal Chacham V'timei, V'yishim Chacham V'yitarer. If you ask a Shaila to somebody, and he says it's Asar, he said it's Tamei, so you shouldn't ask somebody else, and he should be, and for him to permit it. L'chacham Asar, L'yishal L'chacham V'yatir. Right? If someone forbade it, you shouldn't get someone to permit it. Hayu shnayim, if there are two, echam tam echam matar, echad ozer echad matir, im haya echam meim gadol mechaver b'chacham aminyan. So if two people got the shayla at the same time, if one of them is smarter, but whatever exactly chacham aminyan mean, which is a little bit complicated, holei chachara, go after him, v'im lam, and if not, holei chachara machmir. If they're equal, go after the machmir, b'shu ben karach omar no, b'shal torah, holei chachara machmir, b'shal sobram, holei chachara mekel. So this sugya is the locus classicus for the question of why is psak binding, right? Why, when I ask a shayla, do I have to listen? Right, the Gemara here says, right, that's what it is. Right, I am now bound to listen to the psak I get, or perhaps the other posik is not allowed to weigh in, so de facto I am bound to that psak. Why? So there's a machlokas. I just read the second Gemara first, right? Umiya dina kitrei chumre v'atanya lo lamalach kibbeis hil v'arotz alaskar v'yashamei oseh tel oseh. Right here the Gemara just says that normally, right, you can choose either beis hil v'yashamei as long as you can't do mikula v'yashamei kula beis hil v'rasha, right? You can't do both the kula and right, you can't choose kulos because then you're a rasha. Mikhum v'yashamei v'chum 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 v'yasham You can't choose only chumras because then you're just a fool. And when you choose a psak, right, you choose a posik. Now, the Gemara goes on to say that really you can choose multiple poskim as long as it's not internally contradictory, or you can choose different poskim for different areas in halacha, etc. But why is a psak binding? Right? So, if you look, right, one more Gemara, because so we can see the Rashi on it really, right? The Gemara says, Ula ukla pimpadisa, right? Ula went to pimpadisa, and Aisu, the kamei dama v'lo chaza. They brought him damnida, and he didn't want to look at it to see whether it's Torah or Tamei. Amar, Umar, Rilazar, Damar, the Ara, the Yisrael, Havi, Kimik, Lazar, Dirab, Yehuda, Lochazi, Dama, Ana, Achaze. Right? If Rilazar, who is like the Mar, the Asher, right, Yisrael, when he goes to Bavel, Jer, Yehuda's area, he won't pasken. I'm not going to pasken. So Rashi here says, Velo Chaza, Mishum, Quoda, Dirab, Yehuda. He's not willing to pasken in someone else's turf because of the covetor of Yehuda. So many people point to this Rashi and say, well, one reason why I can't contradict the psak that I got is simply kvodo shel chacham. As I ask the shayla, now you listen, right? That's just chutzpah, right? I go to Rav Lachman, I ask him a shayla, and then I ignore him, right? That's just chutzpah. Possibility two. We look here in the Mukha Yosef, he says, Kevin Shishalmein Etchila, Gamar Belibo Lasik Cholash Yoroso. Since you asked the shayla, you've committed to listening to it, right? It's a form of a ned there. And if you look at 13, the Meiri quotes this similarly. If you arrive at, what's the implication if it's a neder? If it's a neder, one could plausibly say that you would even be bound to the decision if the posik changes the mind. Right? Avim chazar rishon tzarech lahachmir. Right? Even if the posik changes mind, I would still be bound to the original psak. Right? Fine. Now, if you just look at the Ramah summary here, these are some of the rules. Right? They're all limitations, and I won't get into all the details. But this only applies when it's Mishikal Hadas. Right? Obviously, if someone made an egregious mistake, that was a Tzav Dvar Mishnah, it's, right, it doesn't work in the sources, so then that's not considered a psak, and you can clearly overturn that. And even if you made a mistake in Svara, you can argue with the original posik and get him to change his mind, right? We don't accept the chumrah of the Ravid. And therefore, in theory, a person can ask a second posik as long as he tells him what the first person paskened, right? He's getting a second opinion. That person will then argue with the first posik, whatever it is. And this works both l'kula or l'chumra. This is only by that psak of b'masa acher, but by another action, another case, pshita yochel oros mashenirei lav. Okay. So we have this halacha, right, that you are bound by a psak. So one way of understanding it simply, kvodo shel rishon, is that it's not kavod of the chacham to ignore his psak. The second one is that it was a neder. You accepted either the posek or you accepted the decision. Right, nafkamina there is going to be whether when the posek changes his mind, you're bound by the original decision or not. This seems to be a dian between the Tumim and the Tashbates. If you look at Rav Tendler's article I quote here in Tchumen Tet, the Ritva famously says not that way. And the Ritva in verse 15 says, Tanar Rabbanan, Shalach Chacham, Perish. Chacham Rai Lahora Avitime. If you ask someone who's actually able to paskin, Lo Yisha Lachacham Yitar. So you can't ask someone else and let him permit it. Okay. L'chacham v'asar l'yishal l'chacham v'yatir perish. Meaning, lo tim al yishal l'chadchila dafko mishum kavod arishon. Don't say this is only the chadchila because of the kavod of the first chacham. Elo filu b'diavad. Even if you already did it. Imshal, if you ask the second person, ein taraso. V'eteros l'achon klum. The second person's psak means nothing. The kevan the kama chacham. Because since the first person is a posek, the ra'i l'hara, kisha hara le'alasar olitoma, when he said it was asar, shav yechaticha di'isura, he turned it into a piece of iser. Perush, ein arash, ayvim asav alo klum. You're not allowed to ask somebody else, and if you did, it's meaningless. Miu dafka, okay, but that's only b'tav v'shikol adas, aval amtav b'tvar mishne, rasor ha'klau. That's only if he made a mistake that would still allow his psak to be considered a psak, right? As we said, right? Certain things are out of bounds. V'lo chal yisr v'chadir adot v'chavir rasha latira. Ve've yodeh, and you should know. When do you say you go after the machmir? That's only according to us. The chayvan the svekahu nakdinim besveka the rise of lachomer. Right? If we don't know the answer, so we are machmir. Aval lidugu fayu, but a posik himself who paskins vaday chayvan the shkulin inu. We call echad omid b'shmuah. So since the poskim who are arguing are equal and each one holds their own way, zeno ekidvara filo kulav, zeno ekidvara. Each of them paskins like themselves. Vachimuchel v'yavamos parakama. Number nam nachem aban lasa karas and holchanachem machmir with the rise of davka v'inina acher. And when do we say that you go lachomra? It's only in a different case. When the actual psak you're talking about, since the poskim involved are equal, if you're the person who asked the person who was mekel, right, an iser cannot be chal in this object. And you can read the rest. So the Ritva says, why is a psak binding? Not because of Kvodo Sharisha, not because I committed, but because psak itself changes the reality. Not Shavye Anafshe Chaticha Durasura, but Shavye Chaticha Yisura. Now, Roshal Yisraeli says what most people think, which is that this only works Lasur, but not Leheter, right? You can only create Isur, but you can't create Heter. But as B'nai Banim, Rav Henkin, points out, I put the reference here on the bottom, points out, the Ritva is explicit, right? When I ask a Shaila, whether the answer is L'chumra, or the answer is L'kula, right? The Psak itself, at least in this Shaila, creates a status of Chumra, or creates a Kula, right? A status of Kula in the object, and that's why I am allowed to, or I'm obligated to follow this Psak, Bein L'kula, Bein L'chumra. Now, Rav Yisraeli points out correctly, why does the Ritva come up with a notion of psak that involves the creation of halachic statuses? Because what does the Ritva hold?
The
Ritva thinks there are multiple halachic truths. So, according to him, it makes a lot of sense. What does psak do? Psak doesn't open options for you. Psak, why does it limit options? Because it creates the decision you have to follow. Right, just like there are certain procedural rules. This is just one example. Right, namely, when I ask a shayla, I have to follow the psak that I get. Now, obviously, again, there are limitations on this. And maybe we'll go into it more in detail at some point. If the psak is untenable, it's considered a tabid var mishnah. So then it has no binding nature. But assuming it's a psak which fits the normal rules and doesn't violate the canon of sources, it actually creates the halachic reality, bein l'chumra, bein l'kula, that I'm obligated to follow. Right? And that is sort of what's going to follow ineluctably from saying that there are multiple halachic truths. Because then, process, right? I'm just using this sort of as a mashal for halachic process in general, halachic process creates halachic reality, or legal reality. Yeah.
So why would riskers be afraid to
paskin? You can't get I don't know.
No, but according to Rav Moshe, should be the one who's afraid to paskin because he definitely gets, if he paskins and he doesn't get the exact truth, then he
from experience, most people are not entirely consistent by how they view the sugya, right? People will have moments where they say they believe in a multiple truth theory, but then they actually don't, or even if they do, right? We know there's some limit on the multiple truth theory, and the question is always, is this the limit, right? No one really knows, right? So, or at some level, and I don't know whether the actual briskers think this or not, but yeah, even Gerul Lechontin, who thinks multiple truths, I don't know whether he always is cognizant of it when he's poskening or not. It's a hard thing to...
But the whole idea is to fulfill every shita. That's like a reflection thing, that's not a...
Well, also, there's a certain level of this in it, right? That if all of them reflect a certain level of truth, then I might want to follow all of them, right? That's also something that is Yotzei from it.
Right.
Okay, this is going to be the last question, I think, then we're going to summarize and you can ask me questions later, yeah.
So if you did ask this rabbi a psak and then you did something else, does that mean that you're violating God's word?
Yeah, presumably, yeah.
It is God's word.
You are now bound, right? Your personal obligation now is to follow this truth.
But is he saying that's from God or that's just what the rabbi said?
No, that creates your halachic reality, right? You are obligated to follow the Torah. This is now your Torah obligation.
Is this halachic reality created by the rabbis or by God?
They're created, they are imbued with, by you asking him, you've invested him with the power to make God's decision on your behalf. That's a very complicated way of saying it, but that's essentially what happens, right? Okay, so to summarize, right? What we talked about in a nutshell, we talked about the philosophical question, right? Are there multiple halachic truths? Or is there one halachic truth we're trying to tap into it, even at the cost of sometimes getting it wrong, right? We follow procedure for practical reasons, because it's more likely to yield truth, but in fact there's only one truth, and really what we're bound by is truth, right? This is typified, right? The more minimalist position is Ramosha, is many, many Rishonim, the Ran. The more maximalist is the Ktsos, which we didn't do, but it's also the Ritva and Rashi, etc. We pointed out, while at some level it would seem that the multiple truth theory would open you up to more possibilities, it's not actually true, because once you say there are multiple theoretical possibilities, process is what's going to bind you. And since we are bound to a process, and we have to go through it, right, that limits the choices we can make. Now, it's still important to understand the philosophy, because it drives what we do, and there are certain cases not bound by procedure, so it's important to understand the background. But at a fundamental level, procedure is more important than theory. And the last thing we did was an example of where this philosophy sort of manifests itself and used this as a mashal for everything in process. So the three possibilities, either it's Kvodel, Sharishon, right, is that the respect we have for the posek. Possibility two is that we commit to it. But possibility three is that no, Psak creates Allah reality, Bein Lekula, Bein Lechomra. And the Ritva, not surprisingly, takes the position that that's what Psak is. And that should really act as a mashal for all of the halakhic process. Because if you really, right, once you commit yourself to the theory that there are multiple truths out there, right, process takes on a completely new role, because process and only process and commitment to the legal system that is halakha is what binds us. So, mikan ve'ilach, what we're going to try to do, and you know, I want feedback to see exactly what direction we're going to do. Again, we want to cover the basic questions like canon, right, precedent, sources, minhag, etc. Then questions of like Kabbalah and Halakha and etc. etc. Then the sort of breakdown of Psak, which is not breakdown, but like the unique cases of Kavarat Sibur, Kavod Habrios, Shasat Chak, Chilul Hashem, etc. And then get to test cases at the end of the year. Thank you for coming. Mincha is in 1 minute. Go. Okay, how do I stop this? Just press stop.
I assume so.